Good morning, good day, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It's Friday, October 18th, 2019, and I'm your guest host, Brian Chaffin, sitting in for Kelly Gumont, and with me today is the space-obsessed Charlotte Henry.
So I actually realized I'm wearing a NASA t-shirt, and I didn't realize I was wearing a NASA t-shirt till I was watching the very, very cool all-female, first ever all-female spacewalk, and then I realized what I was wearing. I'm just so into space that I was wearing a NASA t-shirt without even realizing.
And in the other corner, weighing in at beep, beep, pounds, John Martellaro!
In contrast, I am spaced out.
And you were actually a space scientist, John.
Yes, I was. I worked for Lockheed Martin and NASA.
All right.
Well, that's why John is much cooler than me, because I just like...
Oh, no. No, no, forget that thought. Erase that.
John is much cooler than me. Like space. John got to work at NASA. I wear NASA t-shirts. John got to work at NASA. That's how much cooler he is than me.
All right, so listen.
I only work in space. I was born in Iowa.
Listen. Listen.
What?
We have the perfect topics for a space scientist and a space-obsessed journalist. And that would be Apple operating systems. today's first topic is, I don't think we have stories on either one of these. This is a TDO that is not being driven by actual stories, at least not yet.
2 days without Kelly, we've gone massively off pace. We've caused chaos.
So the first topic is the rapid release of operating system what? Updates from
iOS, which stands for in and out of space.
Good Lord. Good Lord. Kelly, I apologize. No, Apple has released a whole bunch of updates for iOS. John, were you also thinking of the fact that Catalina 10.15.1 is out when you broach this topic?
The betas are out, right?
The beta two. Yeah. Were you thinking of that too, or are you really focused on iOS in your mind?
No, I was focusing on the panic that besets us when Apple comes out with a new version of macOS and the urgings and everything's wonderful.
That's a separate topic. That's topic two. So we're going to focus first on the rapid release of iOS updates. And the premise, John, that you approached us with this morning in the meeting as we were talking about today's show is, what's it mean? So lay out your argument for us.
Well, when I don't recall that Apple has ever come out with this many releases of a major dot release in succession. We're up to 13.1.3 after just a few weeks. 13.1.2 is reported interfered with, caused dropped phone calls for some. How many, we don't know. I take this to be an Apple problem, because iOS is so locked down and it's so segmented, and Apple has such control over iOS and phone calls take such priority that it's very hard for user configuration, some suite of apps, some installs, if you haven't jailbroken your iPhone, hard for a normal app to interfere with a priority one phone call. And so if you get dropped calls, I blame this on Apple directly, on screwing up the release, trying to do something, trying to jigger with something in terms of security or something they're trying to fix or introduce. And then something else comes loose, namely dropped calls. And so right away there was a 13.1.3 fix to fix that for some people. And the question that came up in the meeting was how many people did that affect? Well, evidently it affected enough people that Apple had to come out with a release right away to fix the problem, which meant they were both aware of it and it was affecting enough people that they felt some urgency to make the fix. And so the question is this just Apple being on top of their game, or is Apple kind of messing up a little bit and letting things get out of control and having to do rapid fix up. And I think it's the latter. I think the rush to get iOS 13.0 out along with Catalina created a little bit of extra stress.
But they have that, they have that same pressure every year.
Yeah, but I don't recall this many releases of iOS in succession within a short period of time.
You just blamed it on the pressure of doing both. They do both every year at the same time, roughly.
Yeah.
So
And presumably plan the release stages quite a lot in advance every year. So
even so, the kind of time catches up with them. One reader, I don't remember where I saw it, maybe it was a response and observations to TDO, was at this rate, iOS 14 will be out in November.
Yeah, I mean, it has been a staggeringly quick amount, not staggering number of updates in very quick succession. But look, the truth is we're not going to know why. Apple is not exactly going to come out and say it. But I don't see the argument. I don't see them being much behind the argument that it kind of put too much pressure on itself. Like, we've known iOS 13 is coming for a while. There must have been a very laid out timescale. I don't quite know what's gone wrong. There have been clear problems. We know lots of people have had issues with Catalina. I haven't been one of them, but people, I think, particularly those with older machines, have had issues. iOS 13, again, I didn't have many problems on my 10R, but other people have had a lot of problems with iOS 13, and I don't quite know what has tripped Apple up here. And they have put out an inordinate number of updates, and it's kind of, I think, irritated some users that they've done it so quickly.
Especially if you have a lot of devices in your family. You know,
right, but perhaps this is a new approach that they want to... There was an interesting... I heard a conversation with John Gruber, and this is absolutely outrageous. I'm going to forget the name of who was with him, from the Wall Street Journal. But anyway, they were discussing why, and part of it was to do with perhaps certification, and that they just needed to get the 13.01 registered and certificated quickly and out, and then you get 13, you know, the update out as quickly as you can, because you know that's better, but it has to be in that form to be certificated. Maybe that's right, I don't know.
It had to be out and ready. It had to be timed to be installed on the new iPhone 11s too, and
right,
there's the lead time before the product actually ships. It has to be boxed, and before it's boxed, it's manufactured, and before it's manufactured, it has to have the iOS installed, certified, be ready. So probably a month before September release date of the iPhone 11, they had to have iOS 13 pretty much ready, whether it was ready or not.
These things are probably all true. I think that the more interesting question, and probably the question that some of our listeners and readers have been asking themselves is this a sign of, you know, is it sloppiness? Is it just happenstance? It is like, you know, just a coincidental conflation of different factors all of a sudden, you know, at one time that's causing it? Is it a one-off? Is it a sign of problems with an Apple? And we don't have the answers to that, right? We can't answer that.
I know that the government, DOD, was advising its users not to upgrade to iOS 13.0, to wait for 13.1, because evidently there was a broken connection to their servers. Maybe it was Exchange servers that iOS 13.0 had trouble with. So definitely Apple seems to be behind the power curve on this. Not everything was really battened down for 13.0. As you said,
way, that does seem
it was Joanna Stern from the Wall Street Journal I was thinking of, and she was having the conversation with John Gruber. I can't believe I forgot her name because she's awesome. Anyway.
Right. My guess is that we had a coincidental confluence. I said conflation earlier, and I should have said confluence. Confluence of events and factors that have led to Apple needing to deal with issues that didn't get properly vetted during the main development cycle. That is my guess, and I doubt that it is a sign of trouble, and I doubt that it is the beginning of a trend. At least I hope not.
This goes to the beta testing process, which we'll get to in part two when we talk about macOS. I'm beginning to feel like there's something broken with the beta program, because I've heard stories of people submitting bug reports in the beta process, and then those bugs are not fixed when the version of the operating system is released. And considering how long macOS is beta tested, you would think that things would be nailed down, and yet we've had boatloads of trouble with Catalina at release.
What's
happening with the beta testing program? I'm not sure.
I do find it extraordinary that both on iOS and macOS that we can encounter so many problems when these bits of technology are so long in development. That does seem extraordinary, doesn't it?
I think what happens is that people sign up for the beta program because they want to have the latest and greatest operating system on their phone, and they don't mind if it's got some glitches. They just want to have the glory of iOS 13 early. And then when it comes time to actually sitting down and taking the time and the care to submit a bug report, maybe they don't do it. Maybe they don't have time. Maybe they don't know how to.
Yeah,
maybe
Apple's
it's too much work.
Apple's going to get the crash logs from that stuff.
Well,
there's a lot of data that Apple's going to get regardless of how active.
But then you have to analyze those crash logs as they come in by the thousands, sift through them, understand the implications.
That's Apple's job. That's what they do.
Well, yeah, but do they have enough engineers to actually deal with that influx? Maybe there's so much stuff coming in the crash logs that they just can't properly categorize it and prioritize.
You're not going to start saying that Apple does not have enough staff. I mean, poor Apple, it can't get enough engineers. John.
That's been true for a long, long time. Apple's John. Always prided itself on being a startup. Are you teasing me?
Yeah,
I am teasing you.
All right,
come on,
John. John's let me turn that back on its head, and then we're going to move on to the next topic. Is this a sign that Apple needs to adjust its definition and expectations of being small, startup, lean?
Maybe.
Apple's not a small startup. It's a trillion-dollar company. Come on. This is ridiculous.
Well, so what we're talking about is that Apple has, as John said, prided itself in running mean and lean and nimble. So the idea being that when you have small teams doing the work, you have small team. You're not designing by committee. You're not designing by marketing points. You're getting work done, and you're getting it done quickly.
I totally understand that, but this is also basically the biggest company in the world. It is a trillion-dollar company, and it can work in a lean, efficient manner, but it wants for nothing. It is short of any resource that it could possibly want. There is no excuse for it not having sufficient resources to deal with the kind of issues that John, I think, is probably quite rightly highlighting.
But the trouble is that these kinds of activities are not glorious, they're boring. One might imagine a company would say, let's have a beta testing department, a group of iOS and macOS engineers, and they will be responsible for sifting through all these thousands of crash logs and beta reports that are coming in and feedback to Apple, prioritizing them, and because they're experienced iOS engineers, they'll know which things need attending to, and they'll send a list of priority items with full details and remedies to the development team. Problem is that this is the most inglorious job ever conceived by man. It would bore you to tears.
Sure.
Nobody would want to do that.
The rock stars don't want to do it.
The rock stars don't want to do it, but it's an important job at a fabulous company, and it needs doing. And we've seen with the rollout and the number of updates, with iOS 13 how important that is.
Well, yeah, but again, we don't know if it's updates are emblematic of or symbolic of a trend or a problem, or if it's this coincidental confluence of factors.
Well, I can bring you some color on this because I worked for Apple in federal sales, and we had problems with our customers and the government. And we would collect this information, and we would send radar reports back to corporate. And it seemed like fixing things for government customers was lower priority always than the glitz and the coolness of emojis and memojis and all the cool stuff in messaging.
You didn't have emojis or memojis when you were at Apple.
I mean, stuff like that, the cool stuff, you know what I mean? Okay, just giving you a contemporary example. And so there's this agenda on the part of, there was in my day, that these are the things that are high profile and important to Apple and have glamour and high profile. And the little niggling things that were upsetting corporate, enterprise, government customers, which were, you know, kind of boring stuff like, you know, properly getting your email from an Exchange server, for example, always fell through the cracks.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so I kind of sense that that's still going on, that there's just a wealth of stuff to do and the stuff that they're under pressure to fix gets fixed, and the little things can drop through the cracks and then they blow up on you.
I remember going back a while, thinking to myself, I wish Apple would stop releasing new versions of macOS. This was before iOS was a thing, every year, so that we had time to, like, you know, get used to the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't gone down that thought process in a very long time because, you know, obviously we just all got used to new versions of macOS every year. But and I don't think at this point that Apple could change that. I think that would actually be, that would probably, they'd probably take a PR hit if they were to change that at this point. All right.
Yeah,
listen,
and we've got stuff on the technology roadmap that they want to implement, like all the security changes and dropping 32-bit apps and those sequential security improvements like APFS and loss of 32-bit apps. Those are on their roadmap, and they don't want to just stop doing those things because they have a plan for the development of macOS, and they don't want to slow down the process.
Plus, customers are impatient.
It's true. So we have gone over on this topic, and we are going to keep that in mind for topic two, LOL. And topic two, though, is related. And John, you posited in the meeting this crazy idea that Apple should, like, tell us stuff.
Yeah, here's the deal. When Apple's getting ready to release a new version of macOS, you get a early beta WWDC, and then there's a succession of release notes. They're very geeky. I've read through them before, and sometimes they're way beyond even my skill level in terms of understanding what's going on. Developers need to know all these intricate details, and there's some very early problems in the early betas that are just disastrous, but most users don't run across because they don't get into those kinds of things. So these developer notes are awesome, and they tell developers everything they need to know and steer away from and how, what to fix and be mindful of. And then after the macOS is released, and then you get these nice security documents, macOS and iOS security release notes. It's a PDF document that tells you about the security measures that are taken in the operating system and describes to you the sandboxing and gatekeeper and all this stuff. But in terms of the end user, the guy who's being pushed and panicked and notified to death that it's time to move to the next glorious version of macOS Catalina, nothing, silence. It's just lots of urging, but not much in terms of release notes. Like, you should be aware of the fact of this, and you be mindful that, you know, of course, your Microsoft Office 2011 is 32-bit. It's not going to work. You're not going to be able to boot from FireWire drives. You're going to lose a certain flexibility in classic mode of your mail before you upgrade. You might want to check and see what your mail is going to look like.
That stuff doesn't belong in release notes. It
belongs in some sort of document that says, here's the things you should know before you upgrade. macOS 10.15 Catalina is glorious, but here's a page of things just to be aware of.
Belongs on MacObserver.com.
Well, you know, Charlotte, when we were talking about this in the meeting, I was largely in that camp. And the more I started thinking about it, the more I started thinking, it's not that I want Apple to do our jobs by any stretch of the imagination. But
I'm not far from it. It's just a page.
But I was thinking about how useful it is that the Catalina installer tells you before you install which of your apps will not work after Catalina is installed. And that's sort of heading down this path that John's describing. Right?
Sure.
And that seems to me pretty useful. Like when Apple, at least when Apple is doing major changes like this with the 64-bit app, maybe Apple should go even further than what John is saying and release an outright utility. I know that there are some third-party utilities that would scan your apps. Like, what was it? Go64 was, I think, right, one of the most popular ones. But maybe Apple should go even further, release a utility that goes that looks even deeper than just your apps at things you may have a problem with. Now, one of the things that sort of like I immediately thought of is when John talked about FireWire drives. What if that FireWire drive wasn't plugged in when the user was running the Catalina installer or this non-existent?
Well, it doesn't keep you from putting it in the tech notes.
Well,
I have
it doesn't.
To tell me that, hold on. I want you to tell me that they put their photos in the root of the disk, and because of the cross directory restrictions of Catalina, it's no longer able to see
its
photos.
You're interrupting my point. My point is that Apple can look at its own at the logs on your device and see that you've recently plugged in a FireWire drive.
Oh yeah. There's a lot you could do. Where's AI when we need it?
There's a lot that Apple could do in particular. And so, so maybe there is a role for Apple to do something like this.
I've got a question.
Mac OS Prep app. You run the app and it scours through your machine and looks for things in the wrong places. It looks for apps that are 32-bit. It looks for all sorts of other things you may have done that are unconventional, that maybe the things you got away with in earlier versions of the Mac OS that don't sit right with new security restrictions, and analyze that and kind of warn you, like, here's the things you might want to look out for before you upgrade.
Who do you think is going to do that, guys?
Apple engineers would be the only people who would go enough to do that.
We're just talking about the fact that it's a thankless and unglamorous job.
No. Which users do you think are going to run that? Busy, normal users who just get loads of updates and think, okay.
Well, what if it was part of the installer process?
That's not a bad idea.
That is a good idea and might be the only way it could potentially
when you,
work. When
you click on install Catalina, before the install even starts, this other app runs.
Yeah. That might be the only way you could do it.
Do you wish to proceed?
My point with all of this, whenever we have these kind of conversations, is I always think of ordinary users, and I don't consider any of us three ordinary users by any stretch of the imagination. The fact that we're having this conversation proves that. And so I don't think we use our computers in the way most people do. I don't think we understand our computers in the way most people do. And I try and think about how my family and friends would respond to this and how they would deal with this. And so I think, first of all, I'm not sure that most people do bother to always update when they should. And so I think you need to make, if you want, particularly from a security perspective, if you want more users to upgrade as often as possible, you need to make it as easy as possible. And so first of all, you need to not have all these updates every week because you made a mess of the previous version. And second of all, yeah, maybe you're right. You do need that utility but it would have to run automatically. Also, you know, you have to make it easy for the everyday user. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen.
Here's a thought. First thing you do after you run Catalina, another app runs and it says, are you happy with the state? Are you having any problems? Would you like to back up to Mojave? If so, click here and I'll go find everything you need on Time Machine Drive and put you back the way you were before you even started.
Everybody runs Time Machine.
No, everyone runs Time Machine.
That's like Apple doesn't need to do that, man.
That's just a thought.
That's wiping our butts, man. That's wiping our digital butts.
No, it's not. It's just being friendly, because not you just said the users aren't very tech savvy. Pressing a button here. Glenn Fleischman just wrote an article about some changes to nomenclature in Time Machine under Catalina and how it could be a little problematic for you to go find your proper Time Machine file to back up to Mojave before you release.
So
it's in particle debris coming up this afternoon. So I, as Charlotte said, we're knowledgeable users and we get kind of jaded, but there are people who are helpless when something goes wrong in Catalina and they can't find their photos and their mail's all borked and they go, this was a big mistake. If only I could go back to Mojave, I'd love that.
All right, Charlotte, make your point. We got to wrap up.
Yeah, so my final point really is that actually I think it is our responsibility as people who know Apple and who write about Apple to do that explaining before and after these events, as opposed to rely on the companies to, as Brian puts it, wipe our digital butts.
Okay, but we don't have time, but we have a job where we have an opportunity where Apple leaves spaces. And I think that there are some times when Apple needs to not leave those spaces. And I think that's the heart of John's point. But we are way over. We got to cut this. I want to thank you both. This was a spirited conversation, and I think it was a useful conversation. John, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Charlotte, thank you for joining us from across the pond.
Always a pleasure.
Is it actually always? Yeah, okay, let's go with that.